The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
David Bowes in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. Welcome to The Big Show. Looking forward to hosting for Dory yet again here. And before we get to The Big Lead, just wanted to make a brief observation. I was walking through my neighborhood with my kids, and I see this house with Christmas lights up, and it's kind of clever. It made me laugh, but it had this giant sign that said effing vote, you know, and they structured it so it's this big, huge kind of billboard-esque off the front of their house, so that if you're anywhere near this park, you know, you're going to see this big sign. And it just, it made me sit and ponder about what is the obsession that people have right now of making sure that everybody votes. And I mean, I've heard public service announcements like from the post office, you know, we've got a website and we can give you tips on what to do with that ballot and make sure that, you know, we're going to provide you with everything that you need in order to get that ballot out. And they're not talking about, you know, who to vote for or hints about what the ballot measures have, you know, or what people ask about judicial candidates. How do I know, you know, who to vote for? I don't understand anything about the judicial candidates. All that would make sense. But instead, we live in this world where politicians and media tend to we act like there's this great challenge to filling out the ballot and putting it in the mail. You know, I need some tips. Could you help me? I'm not sure how to move this pen and make a circle or make a check mark. You know, where do I sign? I mean, do I sign in the place where it says signature required, or do I sign somewhere else? You know, so we have this. We've reached a level of absurdity, I think, where, you know, we're trying to make sure that everybody gets out there to vote. The other thing, too, is I've never understood. I guess if I felt like ignorant voters were going to vote my way, I would be all for urging people to vote no matter what. I would just say, yes, you know, get out there and vote. I mean, vote no matter what. Vote your heart. Vote it all. And that's the impression I get. Because there's no other explanation as to why people would be so obsessed with making sure people voted who are actually too lazy to vote or too disinterested to vote or just didn't feel compelled enough to actually fill out anything to register themselves to vote. You know, I mean, I understand asking people, but this constant begging and cajoling and acting like it's a great travesty if people don't vote. Look, your right to vote, you know, is great, but you also have a right not to vote. And so I just find it strange that we act like there's this horrible travesty. If people, I always think it's sad when people don't vote the way I wanted them to vote. You know, if people like that don't actually vote, I think, now that's sad. I wish I had more people on my side. But that said, I also think that if somebody's just too uninspired or unwilling to actually do it, you know, is society at a loss because fewer people didn't vote that didn't bother to take a look at the issues or the candidates or anything else and just kind of voted based on how they felt about somebody or whether they liked their smile or their suit or whatever? You know, or are we better off just kind of, hey, look, everybody knows that it's time to vote. This is how you do it. And active citizens do it. Aren't we better off in that circumstance? And if so, why do we whine so much and so much hand-wringing and so much media, including public service media, which, you know, that could be applied to something like, you know, cancer research or something. Why is so much devoted to that? I don't get it. All right. Speaking of things that I do not get, it brings us to our big lead.
The big lead, big local.
I don't get why Seattle and Portland have to have riots on a weekly basis. I mean, Portland's outdoing us with a near daily basis, but Seattle doesn't seem to be far behind. I mean, another weekend, another riot. Hannah Scott is joining us now to talk about the press conference Chief Diaz had this morning about the arrests of rioters and other matters. Hannah, thanks so much for making the time on the Dory Monson Show.
Sure. Always my pleasure. Glad to see you.
Yeah. Great to talk to you. So the police chief comes out and he's telling us, you know, we heard some of it at the top of the hour. Somebody assaulted a police officer and hit him so hard it cracked his helmet. Tell us about that.
Right. So essentially what this press conference was, this was Seattle Interim Police Chief Adrian Diaz coming out and saying, look, this is where we are. We are not going to tolerate this kind of activity. And they've made some arrests in recent days that really date the One in particular dates back to, I believe it was September 24th or the weekend of that. It was the protest that was held in Seattle in reaction to the non-charging of officers in the Breonna Taylor case, where we saw there was a lot of dumpsters and things set on fire and an assault on an officer. So Diaz says SPD is on the job and ready to serve the city.
The actions alleged in these cases clearly demonstrate the ongoing violence that continues to be connected to some of the riots occurring across the city. Jacob Greenberg is charged with assault in the first degree for hitting an SPD officer in the head with a metal bat so hard during a riot that the officer's helmet was cracked. I'm sure you've seen some of these photos, these disturbing images on your broadcast and on social media. According to the charging documents, after the brutal attack, the 19-year-old from Kirkland express remorse, not for potentially fatally assaulting itself, but for the fact that the officer was wearing a helmet that most likely saved his life. Greenberg also texted a friend that he would like to, and I quote, slit every SPD throat.
That was the moment. There were a lot of the charging documents came out on this particular case on Friday, and there's this lengthy text exchange with another woman who was also arrested because he's charged with a firebombing as well. So they're both facing arson charges. But yeah, pretty heavy stuff there with that officer.
What's the charge on the guy that bashed the officer in the helmet?
It is an assault charge, I believe. Yeah, assaulting an officer.
That's what I thought I heard. And couldn't that ultimately be bumped up to attempted murder? I mean, I feel like if you're hitting somebody on the head hard enough to crack their helmet, and then you're texting people saying, you know, I wish I could have slit their throats, that seems to indicate that you have a desire to kill people.
Well, certainly. And then those text messages, it definitely indicates that. I don't know, though. I haven't had a chance to talk to the prosecutor. It may be a thing where because the officer had his protective helmet on, that it wasn't something that they could prove that he was trying to kill. But I don't know. Maybe combined with those statements, you're right.
Yeah. I just feel like, you know, we throw the book at people first and let them plead out. So
yeah.
I throw the book at this guy.
Well, yeah, and he had originally been released, right? Because he was originally arrested and charged on for reckless burning, and I think it was up to arson later, and that was right after that particular weekend. And then the prosecutor asked for a bail that was later released because he is the stepson of a former state lawmaker who got him released to in her custody. But then just this last week, they rearrested him, and I was now holding him on $750,000 bail, I believe, because of that attack on the officer.
Yeah, I wonder if the former legislator knew about the attack on the officer at the time.
I don't believe so.
I understand sticking up for stepson, trying to do a solid, you know. People are young. How old is this guy, 19?
He's 19, from Kirkland. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, so, you know, he's about to learn that you don't get to stay a kid forever, right? You know, you can say I'm just a kid, but once you're past 18 or 18 and above, you can say you're a kid, and you are in some circumstances, but not when it comes to legal responsibility. So, you know, welcome to adult jail processes. So
right. Chief Diaz also detailed another arrest.
20-year-old Jonathan Duger of Olympia is also in jail, charged with arson for throwing a flaming object with an ignited fuse into a Capitol Hills coffee shop that caused an immediate explosion. Luckily, no one was hurt. But this disregard for people's lives and safety by throwing flaming objects into a business, this can't be our new normal. Businesses small and large are struggling during this pandemic, and it is completely unacceptable that this is an ongoing violence is only compounding their challenges.
So this is a big deal. This is really one of the first times you've heard law enforcement come out and say they're not going to let you go out and destroy businesses. Because honestly, it's over and over and over again. I think the Starbucks up on Capitol Hill there, I've personally watched it get smashed in at least twice. And I've seen it happen other times that I've not been out at the protest, probably two or three other times. Same with Uncle Ike's and all of that. They're repeatedly targeted the same businesses. So that coming from the chief today was a little different than I'd heard before.
And it's about time. I mean, when you say that out loud, it just makes me chuckle, not because of the situation, but because, you know, I grew up thinking, and through most of my adulthood, I thought if you firebombed a business, you would be in jail. Like, that's beyond toleration. Can't be firebombing things. And then, you know, we get a bunch of protests going on and we learn, oh, it turns out you can firebomb things with reckless abandon. You know, and there's, it's like, I have toddlers and they're constantly testing to see where their limitations are. And there's protests going on in Seattle with a core group of violent rioters that decide they're going to keep testing and prodding and see what's the consequence, what can we get away with, how much destruction can we cause. And the city is like a paralyzed parent at a grocery store with a temper-throwing toddler. So instead of like laying down the law and saying, enough's enough, this is done, we've been, you know, like, hey, I'll give you a candy. I'll give you this. I'll give you that. I'll give you this. And it's just happening over and over and over again. When they say nobody got hurt, talk about getting lucky. It's not like, you know, fire you can control once it really gets going. You know, you don't know who's going to be there. I seriously doubt if these guys did due diligence, you know, and walk through the store to make sure there's nobody in the back cleaning or nobody's sleeping above the store or whatever else, you know. I mean, it's just it's a miracle more people haven't been killed, frankly. You know,
yeah, I was out in a small group of these protesters several months ago. One of the first times I saw them start lighting things on fire. And it was, again, it was a small group that was part of another small group that kind of broke off and went after this one particular store, busted in the windows, brought all the clothes and all the goods outside, set it on fire. And it was a big fire in the middle of the street on Capitol Hill. And I was a bit taken aback by it. It didn't look organized. I don't even think the people that necessarily did it knew each other. They just knew that it was owned by the, I believe, a spouse of an officer related to the Charlina Lyles case. And that's why they were targeting it. But it doesn't look like there's a lot of prep, is my point.
Yeah, nothing says justice more than going after various things because there's a relative somewhere that, you know, is connected to another case. You know, that's what ridiculous and dysfunctional countries that are considered not first world do. And their economies and justice systems are collapsed because of it. So, you know, I mean, I look at this and I have no doubt, or there's a part of me that thinks if the neighborhood had gotten together and said, all right, this has happened twice, enough's enough. Now, if we see somebody attacking this business, we're going to club them. You know,
there is security.
I feel like they would get arrested, you know.
Yeah, no, there is many businesses up on the Capitol Hill area where the drop was that have continued to be targeted, and even some in the downtown core who have their own security now all the time because they are worried about this kind of thing happening. And look, when these protests were larger, I had the opportunity to talk with a lot of the people who were taking part, who were damaging businesses, who were looting and who were doing things like that. And I would say, why your message is getting lost? And they would tell me, this is the point. We want to disrupt. It was about Black Lives Matter, and it was about making up for centuries of being underfunded and all of that and systemic racism. And their point was, we need to upset the norm so that everybody is listening to us, and the damage to a business is nothing compared to the life of a person who was killed by a police officer. I see what they're saying. That's not even who we're talking about, though, here tonight that are going on still nightly on the weekends. It's a very different group, a smaller group that is just intent on all this destruction.
Yeah, I mean, I understand what they're saying. I think it's BS, and I think it's a bogus approach, but I understand it. I'm just glad that at least currently we're going after people that are doing this kind of destruction, because you don't know. I mean, I've known plenty of people who've been working their own businesses and trying to keep things going and trying to keep people employed. You know, I know people on the employment side that are just, you know, living paycheck to paycheck, trying to make things happen. And on the business side, they've invested all of their time, spent time away from their family, their kids, their other obligations in order to get something moving. They feel the pressure of keeping employees employed. And throw in a pandemic here,
right?
And you've got these enormous pressures, and then you got a bunch of people that decide, you know, I'm judge, jury, executioner. You know, this, I'm just going to destroy these people's lives and say, well, it's justified because now somebody will listen to me more. Total BS. I'm glad to see they're prosecuting more. What else happened at the press conference today?
So again, I want to make clear that the chief had this message about making sure that SPD is on the job and protecting and serving the city.
I want to address these recent arrests to let you know the Seattle Police Department continues to serve and protect this city. SPD officers will continue to protect peaceful First Amendment rights, and we will continue to enforce the law against those who engage in destruction and violence. If you destroy property, if you attack officers, and especially if you engage in violence against other members of this community, the Seattle Police Department will investigate. The SPD will hold you accountable. We will work to provide all victims with some measure of justice.
And that too, so that provide all victims with some measure of justice. I don't know what exactly that looks like, but that was something. And he also told me, and I know it's the case with the gentleman who used the baseball bat on the officer is accused of, that they are partnering with the feds. So there's been in several of these arson cases, there have been federal charges filed. I believe, again, just last week, there was one involving the very first protest we saw in May, the riot where the SPD cars were torched and guns were stolen, where there was federal charges filed. So he said, absolutely, when they rise to that level where they can be charged federally, they are partnering with the feds in the city.
Now, when he said that they're on the job, the police are on the job, I mean, I appreciate the sentiment, but I was also reading today that there's a lot of police leaving, you know, and they're no longer on the job because they're headed out of Seattle. Did he address that at all?
He did, and he was asked about that, and he said, basically what he said was that those officers largely are going to other departments, and that's a process that takes some time. So he said what we're seeing as far as the numbers right now are those who decided to leave once the defunding SPD conversation started at the Seattle City Council back in over the summertime. He painted it as though, you know, perhaps they weren't sure because of that conversation that they'd have a job. So it was more of like a security issue. So they just went ahead and started applying other places, went through that process and moved on. And there may be some truth to that to a certain degree, but I know that I heard directly from officers who reached out, many of them, on Friday after I posted my own story about those officers who were leaving in the department, seeing so many losses. And that's not what I'm hearing. There's a real feeling that the city does not back them, whether that's the council or the mayor's office, and that why would they still work at SPD? I've also heard that there will be many more gone over the next 6 to 8 weeks, so we'll see if that comes to fruition. But Chief Diaz says he's doing the best he can, switching everybody over to patrol, so you are seeing these larger showing of officers for these nightly demonstrations that go on, no matter how small, and it's a more aggressive tactic, so it's a little different vibe than we had over the summer.
Yeah, I'd be curious to know about its sustainability just because of the cost and the drain on the department resources and other things. That's why, you know, the long delay of cracking down on this nonsense is going to cost everybody, because it costs social services and everything else that the city has to do. It's kind of funny hearing that they're not sure about what's happening with the officers. Not funny ha-ha, but just funny as in, you know, most of the time there's an exit interview. And it's not like it's a mystery whether the Seattle City Council supports the officers or not. I mean, this is not one of those where, I just kind of got a vibe. You know, you're getting like a neon billboard tattoo on you that says, "We don't like you," you know.
Yeah, he was specifically asked about the exit interviews, and he said, you know, I don't have them all in front of me. I think a lot of this had to do, he said, timing-wise with the defund, but that conversation is still going on as we go through the next budget, so we'll see.
Yeah. All right, Hannah Scott of Cairo, thanks so much for making the time here on the Dory Monson Show.
You bet ya.
David Bowes in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. David Bowes in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. I know what you're thinking. I only wish that 2020 could last forever, that we'd just never get done with the election, that I could just listen to Donald Trump and Joe Biden slam each other just for the rest of my natural life. But it's all going to end, and it's going to end quickly. Now, for Joe Biden, apparently it can't end quickly enough. His campaign wants him to hunker down and kind of avoid any major statements or question answering until, say, the next presidential semi-debate. I hate to even call them debates because it just seemed to be separate interviews. But the laptop situation of the New York Post is such that, you know, it's so important that he not answer questions that you've got a bunch of media sources that are jumping around trying to make sure that everybody knows that it's inappropriate to ask questions. And some in the media also think that reporters who ask questions, even if critical of the source, say that, you know, that even reporting on that basis is wrong. President Trump, on the other hand, thinks that the Hunter Biden laptop, Hunter Biden being Joe Biden's son, is not only worth consideration, but shows a corruption spread through the Biden family.
So did you hear the new one? I was waiting for this. So they find this horrible, horrible laptop of Hunter. Where's Hunter? Where's Hunter? But Joe is far more corrupt than Hunter, because Joe knew every. Joe's getting a piece of everything. They have it in the email, 10% and 50%. But Joe is far more corrupt than Hunter.
So he accuses the Biden family of this vast corruption and other things. And what's interesting to me is, you know, one, it's unknown whether or not this laptop actually is Hunter Biden's or not. There's some things that indicate that it is. It's got kind of a mysterious origin. You know, it was left at a repair shop. It wasn't repaired. Rudy Giuliani was given the laptop. Steve Bannon knew about it, and that's how they landed, you know, this information. So, yeah, there's a lot of politics swirling behind it, but it's also a political scandal. So if you have political dirt, of course, you know, the political operatives are going to get it. And Biden says that it's, you know, not worthy of a response, which is both great as a I'm not going to reply. He's ahead in the polls. So, you know, you don't want to have to get yourself into the mire. So you just say, you know, that's not worthy of a response. But it also doesn't say much. Right. So it's not saying that the laptop is fake. You know, he said before he had nothing to do with any of these Ukrainian business dealings with his son, yet he was in charge of Ukrainian policy for the Obama administration. You know, and for me, it would be worth sniffing around at the very least, simply because his son was getting $50,000 a month. And I don't know about you. I mean, I hope I can get land my son a job at $50,000 a month, you know, and it's not just due to inflation. But, you know, it seems like if my son gets a $50,000 a month job in an energy sector in which he has no experience to be on a board, to serve on a board, coincidentally, because the father is in over Ukrainian U.S. relations, you know, that smells. Right. I mean, I think we can all agree, regardless. Maybe you're thinking it doesn't matter. He's still better than Trump. We should just ignore it. You know, that I'm just saying, can we agree that it stinks? Something about that deal stinks. You know, it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to vote a different way. I'm just saying that alone kind of reeks. And so it seems like it's a little quick for Twitter and Facebook and others to say, how dare you share the New York Post information? You know, let's curtail that. Let's ban Twitter accounts like Trump's for sharing that information, or suspend, I should say. And, you know, instead of letting people decide, hey, this is a good source or a bad source, I didn't get the same sense of a desire for all-out confirmation when it came to the Russian dossier on Trump. You know, and the impeachment of Trump that also had, by the way, the Hillary Clinton campaign swirling around getting obtaining the dossier from an agent of a foreign country. Again, nobody cares about that. A foreign country's involvement in elections, if you're paying for it, that involvement, that doesn't matter as long as you've got a D next to your name. So it's a strange thing that the larger media has this double standard to me. When it comes to, you know, the Trump-Russian dossier, yes, that deserves coverage. We'll have impeachments and other things, and we'll do that for about 2 years. And then on this thing, it comes out, and it's like, well, it's the New York Post. What do you expect? Nobody should share it. Nobody should look at it. And we certainly shouldn't be asking additional questions. So it seems strange. Although one reporter was brave enough to ask a bold question from Joe Biden when he got the chance at a campaign event. I remember Biden's kind of avoiding reporter questions right now, but this guy just stood out and said, you know, what he asked the question I think that was on everybody's mind.
We got everybody in milkshake, didn't we?
Yes, sir.
We got everybody?
Yes, sir.
MacArthur.
All right.
You got him.
Hey, look.
Mr. Biden, what flavor did you get?
We got one vanilla, one chocolate, but I wanted to get a what we call black and white, but we're going to move it.
Yeah. So we know the flavor of milkshakes that he bought for everybody. So, and what flavor did you get? You know, and then Biden's, by the way, do you ever say for a chocolate and vanilla, I'll have a black milkshake or a white milkshake? That was kind of a weird response, wasn't it? You know, anyway, so we know that Biden's milkshakes were vanilla and chocolate. And that's about it. A Biden surrogate on Fox Business defended the former vice president and was holding the line.
Well, I don't know if he attacked the person. I think he just said it was fake news. I'm sitting here.
I think he said, it's another smear campaign right up your alley. Those are the questions you always ask. That kind of sounds like an attack to me.
That doesn't strike me as an attack. I'm sure you can find some other statements on behalf of the campaign that are specifically an attack, like what your other guest just said, that having conversations and working with the Chinese government is the same thing with working with the Nazi party. Like, compare apples to apples for me on that.
Okay, the Chinese Communist Party has concentration camps. It was Joe Biden who was over trying to do business with the Chinese and brought Hunter Biden along with him to introduce him around. And there's video of that.
We've just lost 200,000 Americans because of a pandemic that was poorly controlled. So if you want to talk about the loss of life because of bad leadership, let's have that conversation.
I'm so confused. What's interesting is I feel like you still haven't answered the fundamental question, which is, can anyone say that these emails are inauthentic? And so far, I haven't heard anybody say that.
So there's a couple of things. One, I always feel dumber after watching cable news, with the exception of watching Brett Baer's show on. I enjoy the news hour with Brett Baer. But, you know, here we have a couple of things. One, when you're comparing to the Nazis, it always kind of falls apart because it gets odd. Although he does point out, and I think it's worth saying, well, maybe the Nazi comparison shouldn't have been made, but the Chinese government does have concentration camps. It is yanking children away from the Uyghur Muslims and putting them into re-education facilities as well as adults. It does make journalists and others who criticize the government disappear. And it is a totalitarian regime, you know, and with grandiose world ambitions, we might add. So, you know, that's a problem. It's also strange that Joe Biden would bring Hunter Biden along for what is, I don't think it was just sightseeing, particularly when so much money's involved. So, you know, you've got that. You get problems with the way the business host responds. You get problems with the Biden campaign there. But it seems to me that there's enough stuff that smells with the Hunter Biden financial dealings that it should at least intrigue more media beyond Fox. That's all I'm saying. David Bowes in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. David Bowes in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. You know, you just can't listen to the Beach Boys without feeling pretty good about life. You know, pretty happy about what's going on. And at least that's for everybody except for Brian Wilson and Al Jardine. They say they're a little upset. They heard their music was being played, and it was being played with their former band member, Mike Love. Who was playing for a Trump event, and it was a fundraiser for President Trump in California. This led the other two members of the Beach Boys to be a bit upset, outraged that, hey, our music's being played here. We have nothing to do with it. Didn't even know about it till we read it in the Seattle Times. How does this happen? Well, Mike Love has the license to perform under the Beach Boys' name. And more power to him. He's 79 years old, and he's still rocking it with a new crew. So good for him. And you know, the others, they're disavowing, they're upset. They told Variety, you know, we have absolutely nothing to do with this benefit. We didn't even know about it. We're surprised to read about it. I feel like there's a lot of, like artists have this kind of social club, and it's similar to the political social club where it's really cool to be a Democrat and it's cool to be on the left, and you can get invited to different places. You can do whatever they want. Doesn't matter how controversial the left has gotten or how crazy, you know, it doesn't matter what their record is. But, you know, you start singing for somebody with an R next to their name and, you know, boy, the social club's going to come after you. And all of a sudden you've committed treason somehow. And I think so often these artists forget that roughly half their audience is people who might have a different political viewpoint from them, you know, particularly in this case, because the Beach Boys appealed to older voters. So, you know, I know Biden's been making some grounds there, but still. So the guy wants to play for Trump. Why don't you just say, you know what? He's got the license to play our music. You know, I support so-and-so. He supports somebody else. Live and let live. You know, wouldn't that be a refreshing take? Wouldn't that be something that, you know, you could live with at this point? All right. Joe Biden had, you know, he's been in the bunker. He's not coming out, at least until the desire for questions is, regarding this laptop is fully squashed by his allies out in the media world. And so he's got surrogates that are holding rallies for him, big rallies. I mean, important rallies. Liz Warren showed up to step into his place at a big rally in the swing state of Minnesota. And this is how it went.
Donald Trump threatens the existence of human life, of all life on this planet.
All right. But she's talking to eight people. Eight people showed up at this park in Brooklyn Park, Minnesota. Eight people, only six of them could vote because the other two were kids. And there's a picture that was posted of her speaking. It's a nice backdrop of trees. It's kind of a pretty park. And everybody looks like, you know, it's kind of typical Minnesota. You know, winter is definitely there because they're wearing some pretty thick coats. So she's got the Biden-Harris sign podium and then a bunch of pumpkins beneath it. And that's pretty much, you know, these seats. By the way, for only eight people showing up, it's bizarre that they don't have people spaced farther apart. I mean, I'm guessing they have to be from the same household, right? So it looks like there might be two households there or three households there, because I don't know how they're counting. It looks like two of the people in the crowd might be staffers. Then there's three people in a seat. That's got the one person has the two kids. I'm counting that as one household. Then two people that are clearly sitting closer than 6 feet together. So I'm guessing that's another household. And then one guy off on the side with his arms folded. And then it looks like there might be one other lady standing there. One has a camera with a tripod. I'm guessing professional staff. And the other is just kind of standing right in front of the podium in front of God and everybody. So the coat's too nice. I'm guessing it's not a park. It's not a spectator. It's a staffer. So, you know, I think eight is an overcount. It's a weird thing, though, because you look at the polls and there's only, you know, basically all the polls are showing Biden ahead except for one, which we'll talk about a bit later. But, you know, you look at these events like that and you think, how is that possible? What's going on here? Hard to say. All we know is the Beach Boys. You know, just strip the politics out and enjoy yourself. David Bowes in for Dory Monson on 97.3 Cairo FM.